Hello and welcome back to another edition of Aster's Economic Week in Review. As always, we have Aster's Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein, with us. John, how's your week going?
Well, great, Mac. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Some interesting data over the course of the past week, as well as coronavirus cases spiking. We have a president-elect. Let's start off, John, with, and today is Thursday, November 12th. What do we see happening in the labor market?
Yeah, well, usually we like to start off with the labor market. That's always the most important thing that's going on. Do people have jobs or not? So the overall state of the labor market is that in the shutdown in March and April, we lost about 20 million jobs. We made maybe 12 million of those jobs back, but the race of recovery is slowing. And so that's what we're looking at today. That's what we're looking at these days. Today, this week, the next couple months is, you know, how quickly are we adding those jobs back? Where are they coming back? How well paid are they? All that stuff. And so we have a little bit of new information exactly today with the weekly unemployment insurance report. That number has been quite steady at around a million claims between state and federal programs. 2 months ago, it was up at 1.2 million. A couple of weeks ago, it was at 1.1 million. Now it's a million, but, you know, quite steady. I mean, still downward to flat, but basically large, right? So like a million is a lot, right? It should be, if we were in a recovery, it should be 300,000, 200,000. And so also, you know, we got a number last week that said that the unemployment rate was 6.8%. So you're like, okay, so we'll put that in one side. 6.8%, that sounds like a lot, but getting better. On the other hand, if you just take all the people who are getting jobless benefits right now and divide that by the labor force, you get 8%, right? So you've got an insured unemployment rate of 8% right now. You know, there's a little bit of noise, a little bit more noise than usual in these numbers, a little bit of classification error. You know, it's going to be a little bit more complicated. We have to pay more attention than usual. Can't take everything at face value. And again, so that insured unemployment rate does continue to drop. There is a concern that some of the federal programs are expiring on December 31st, and it does not look like we have two parties that can work and play well with others at this point. That can change any time, right? There's no reason why they can't come to an agreement in an instant. Another concern is that some of those programs, even if they don't expire on December 31st, they can be limited in terms of how long you can be on them, and people are going to start to drop off them just because of time. Mm-hmm. So that's about 4 million people on that program that I'm thinking about.
And we've talked about the job openings, the JOLTS survey in the past, and kind of the unreliability of that particular data point.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's
not unreliable, but I mean, the headlines this week is that we're at pre-pandemic levels of the number of open jobs that are available in the U.S. economy. So you have the uninsured coming off. I mean, have you seen any type of transparency into the type of jobs that are opening? Why are they not being filled with these millions of people that are collecting unemployment? What are your thoughts?
Yes, I mean, I think some of it is that there was an interesting comment in the Beige Book a couple of weeks ago that.
And just for our listeners, the Beige Book is the notes of the Federal Reserve.
The Beige Book is it's sort of qualitative comments that the Federal Reserve puts together before meetings. They just ask if you work at the Fed, part of your job is to talk to business people and say, how's it going? And then they write all that down. There's a comment saying that some firms are almost seeing its full employment and that they have to raise wages to attract workers because of workers' reluctance to work right now because it's dangerous. Or they have to stay home and watch their kids or whatever. And that is interesting, right? So you see workers, so it's not that like we're close to full employment because there's not many people out there, but we're close to full employment to the extent that employers need to raise wages to lure people in. So, you know, I think that might be what's going on with the fair number of job openings out there is that, you know, employers want to pay $15 an hour, but the market clearing rate is really $18 an hour now, and people aren't coming together on that. One thing that's interesting is that the quits rate, and this is also from the JOLTS report, ticked up a little bit, and it's at fairly strong levels, right? So the quits rate is, you know, how many people quit last month. And usually you would interpret that to be a sign of labor market confidence, right? Like if I quit, I think I can get another job, or maybe I already have another job. I'm worried that that is reflecting what we were just saying, that people do not feel safe being in the labor force, or are constrained by family obligations to drop out of the labor force. That's my worry with that.
I mean, it has to be at the minimum a blend of the two, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you do see the layoffs rate dropping to lower than it's been, you know, ever been, right? So layoffs rate usually sort of ticks along at a normal level, goes up in recessions. It spiked up crazy in March and April, and now it's actually below where it was in 2018, 2019. So I'm not sure what to make of that.
So big picture, John, before we move on from the labor market, where's your confidence level? Not so much today, right? But like you're saying, with the quit rate rising and what it potentially could be the underlying factors, with the jobless claims continuing to be at historically high levels, even though they're lower than they were 5-6 months ago, they're still historically high.
Yeah, the jobless claims are grinding down. Yeah, so I think today, if all you knew was these numbers, you'd say things are still improving, though slower than you would like. For example, like right now, the payroll is lower than it was the worst point in the Great Recession, the 2008 recession. One thing that worries me also that we mentioned briefly, Rob and I mentioned briefly in last week's podcast, is that like the state and local education payrolls are down a lot, right? They're down well below they've been in 10 or 15 years. And continuing to drop. And, you know, those are real numbers, right? There's probably 700,000 people in local government education, another 300,000 people in state government education is, you know, the state university system, right? Which is sort of like, you know, a huge part of America's success over the last 100 years, like not to get too dramatic about it, but like, you know, having affordable world class education available to people in California and Illinois and Michigan and New York has been amazing. When we're cutting those numbers, that's just unnecessary and like it's going to reduce your expected rate of growth in the future.
Some of our listeners may have like lifted an eyebrow when he said affordable, but you know, I guess that's
more affordable than private education, yeah, if you're in state.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, John. That's really interesting to think about. Where do you think those cuts are coming from at the university level? Are we talking about, the cafeterias aren't open, or are we talking about?
I think it's probably a little bit of everything, right? Yeah. So, and state and local governments are, we've said 100 times in this podcast, but we'll just repeat it. Like state and local governments are squeezed for cash. Their taxes are going down. Their expenses are going up. And you know, any stimulus package has to basically just throw some money at the state and local governments, or this recession is going to be much worse than it needs to be.
Yeah, in Illinois, there was a something called the fair tax is what they dubbed it on the ballot, and it did not pass. And so now they're talking, I mean, they have to find the revenue to pay for the expenses, and that was, they're hoping it would pass. It was voted down. So now it's going to be pretty interesting to see the cuts that are going to have to be made in Illinois, as well as where they're going to try to increase revenue from, you know, and additional taxes from somewhere. So
states are on a balanced budget, have balanced budget amendments, forcing them to be, their budgets to be balanced. So that's a problem.
So John, that wraps up the labor market. Let's move on to CPI or inflation.
Yeah. Inflation is extremely quiet. It's ticking down a little bit. Sort of one thing about what you might think of like the core of the core is the owner's equivalent rent, which is, so obviously like if you are measuring rent, like that's easy to calculate inflation for. It's much more complicated to calculate inflation for somebody who owns a house, which is a lot of people, but they figure out like how much would you have to pay to rent that house. And that's a huge slug of the CPI and it's quite stable usually. And that number just is going down, right? So I feel like there's not much happening in inflation land exactly today. And I don't see much happening in the near future.
Not a lot of inflation you see right now. Yeah, John, so speaking of, you know, mortgages or the housing market being a part of the CPI and inflation, let's move over to the housing market. Mortgage applications, delinquencies, what are you seeing over there?
Yeah, so like mortgage applications are still elevated. So it's having a seasonal decline, right? So it always goes down as the weather gets cold. And troughs around New Year's, and then peaks around the end of school. So it's going down, but it's well above any place it's been the last 10 years, but declining, and it's going to decline further into the end of the year. So mortgage applications is still robust. Housing market is still a lot of demand for it. On the people who already have a mortgage side, it's interesting. So the foreclosure rate is actually quite low. You know, it was 0.4% of mortgages were in foreclosure last year at this time. Now it's 0.3%.
Is that because there's been so many programs put in place for banks to extend?
Yes.
Patience. Yeah, right.
Exactly. So I was going to say, so the actual foreclosure rate is quite low, but the forbearance rate is quite high. So there's 4.3% of mortgages are 90 days or more overdue, compared to 1.3% last year at this time. At some point, they'll start to migrate into foreclosures.
Right. I mean, I have a cousin in Detroit, and you know, he's in transition between jobs, and he was kind of talking. I was talking to him, like, have you called your bank and just asked for an extension or, you know, some sort of patience with your mortgage? He's like, he didn't have any idea that was an option. And he called, and they gave him 3 months of no mortgage. And they just added that to the back end of his cycle. So
banks don't want to own your house either. Like, banks, last thing they want is your house.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the real question is, you know, what is the sleeping dragon underneath the forbearance, and will that come to fruition, right, and actually turn into foreclosures? Or will the banks not want a repeat of 2008, 2009, and just kind of keep having patience and extending, hopefully, hoping that people get back on their feet?
Yeah, I mean, extend and pretend, like, how long can they do that? They're probably getting regulatory guidance that they should, but it can't be
forever. I mean,
it could be forever. It seems unlikely to be forever, though.
Yeah.
So that's it for the major stuff. There are a few sort of oddball things to talk about this week.
I love oddball things. What do you got?
One is, if you look at the level of consumer credit outstanding, so they break that down to revolving and non-revolving. So non-revolving would be like your auto loan or your mortgage, and that is stable. The level of consumer credit growth is stable. But the non-revolving, your credit card, dropped like a rock, right? So it's gone from being up, you know, basically 5% a year pretty steadily for the last several years, and now it's down about almost 10%. So people are not using their credit cards, which, you know, we've talked a couple times about the dry powder, and with the vaccine news this week, and there's going to be more good vaccine news next week too, right? Moderna's reporting, they're going to report good numbers. You know, we can start to get excited about how good 2021 can be. Like we've said, there's probably $1.5 trillion in excess savings. Some of that is certainly ready to be deployed when there's an opportunity. People are not building up debt. So I think that there's a chance for a really good 2021. In fact, like, if you want to Google, so we had a guest on here a couple of weeks ago, Tim Duy, D-U-Y, and if you Google him, he's got a report out now, or a column out now, saying Biden set up for, you know, a perfect storm of a great 2021, 2022, great economic performance. So if you're looking for good news, go Google Tim Duy, Bloomberg, and you'll find his note.
Well, I was saying that it's pretty amazing that on the first business day of being the president-elect, he was able to get a vaccine.
He did. And that's the kind of results you're going to get from the Biden administration.
Right.
Vaccines every day. And so then also on the sort of card front, we do talk once in a while about Chase, sort of just totals up how much everybody's spending on their credit and debit cards that they offer. So that's, you know, 20 million people, 25 million people. So it's a decent, non-representative, but still a pretty good survey. And so that climbed steadily from down 40% in April to down about 5% in September. And it's still sort of bouncing around those levels. It got a little better. Now it's gotten a little worse in the last couple of weeks. And I'm through this November 6th, last Friday. I'm guessing that is because of, you know, the crazy amount of spreading there is in a lot of parts of the country. And just, people are just going to stay home.
Yeah, we have a pool here wondering if the school will shut down before Thanksgiving, or I mean, we're pretty confident that they'll keep kids home between Thanksgiving and Christmas, or I guess the New Year. But
yeah, I'm trying to brace my kids for that as well.
Yeah, I'll just have to brace my wife. The kids I can handle. You know, it's like it's having the kids all stuck at home with all of us, which is always interesting. So, John, anything interesting on the airlines? Open table reservations. You know, you saw a huge bounce in a lot of these stocks or airlines that are kind of dependent on a virus. That type of reaction that data won't show up for months, right? In terms of, or maybe at least weeks. But where do you see anything on the high frequency data?
So in the high frequency data that we've talked about a few times, like the TSA security clearances or the open table US seated diners, those are telling the same story. No real improvement in the last several weeks, last, I don't know, 10 weeks maybe in those. Still, you know, maybe, 50% or so below where they were last year, and not improving.
Got it. Well, I think
it's consistent with the rest of the story we've been telling.
Yeah. So, John, that pretty much sums up our agenda. Any parting comments?
Wear your mask.
Speak for
it. That's it. Yeah, be safe.
Forever hold your peace. All right, great. Everyone have a fantastic weekend. We will see you next week. I know we're working on some more guests for the podcast. So as always, thank you for listening. If you have any questions you want us to address on the podcast, feel free to email us at info@asterim.com. And again, have a great weekend. See you, John.
Oh, wait, there's also more information. You can see charts on the website too.
Yeah. You know, we say that, probably every other podcast, if you go to asterim.com/charts, you can see the actual charts, interactive charts of all the data points, and then some that we discuss here on the podcast. So check that out. See you, John.
Bye.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations. The Aster Economic Index is a proprietary index created by Aster. It is not an investable product and should not be used as the sole determining factor for your investment decisions. There is no guarantee the index will produce the same results in the future.